And on today's show, we'll grasp a syrupy outdoor shower flower, get top-notch advice on growing atomoyas and their kin, and try our hand at fruit pollination. But first, we'd like to let you know that this KCR program is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with our generous underwriters.
Harvest Market Natural Foods and Cafe in Hanalei is proud to support KKCR and its Ohana, offering organic groceries and produce, a cafe featuring fresh salad bar, hot meals and soups, fresh-made smoothies, and baked goods. Located in the heart of Hanalei, Harvest Market Natural Foods and Cafe, 826-0089.
Kauai Marine and More, located in Old Kapa'a Town, is proud to underwrite this KKCR program. Kauai Marine and More features Honda garden and lawn equipment and also Echo power equipment. 823-0556.
Anahola Stringed Instruments is proud to support KKCR. Mickey Sussman has been building Island Koa guitars, ukulele, and violins on Kauai since 1972. Time-honored design and special orders. Prompt and complete restoration, repair, and reforestation. AnaholaStringedInstruments.com or 822-1645.
Aya's Garden, all-natural garden and greenhouse supply. In Kapa'a, down Kukui Street from the Dragon Building. Fertilizers, amendments, soil, seeds, garden and farm organic growing supplies. Open Monday through Saturday. More information at 822-7333 or visit Aya's Garden on Facebook.
Oh, yes. Thank you to each and every one of you for keeping us on the air and keeping us in good supply with all the things that you do in our community. Everybody's out there working hard and putting in their piece that makes this beautiful island such a great place to live. And it's great to live here with you, Robin. I love being a Kauaian with you.
Likewise. Thank you.
We have a tremendous show, a lot of fun. We're looking forward to it. I guess if we have fun, you'll have fun. So we're going to have a great time. And we're going to jump in and we're going to honor the celestial influences. It has been great star watching weather. And last night was pretty spectacular, clear and crisp. And let's have some more evenings like that, please, if we can. We're going to go into the Hawaiian moon calendar as we do first, then we'll drop into the biodynamic wisdom. And starting off today's moon phase, brought to you by the 2014 Ke Ala o Ka Mahina calendar, a publication of Hui Mauli Ola and Kamehameha schools. Today's Hawaiian moon phase, La'au Kulua. This is a moon rising up out of the ocean on Kauai tonight at 9:39 p.m. She will reach her transit, her highest point in the sky, at 4:01 a.m. tomorrow morning, and she'll set at 10:26 on Thursday, 10:26 in the morning. 86% of the moon's beautiful face will be illuminated. And we have the last quarter moon coming up on Sunday, the 17th at 2:26 a.m. La'au Kulua is a good day for gathering medicinal plants. And it's one of three La'au moons. The final day for preparation, the traditional thing was to gather them over the first couple of days and then prepare them on the final day. One of the good things about having a home garden here on Kauai is the ability to gather medicinal plants just when you need them. I'm thinking of aloe, which is great every day, but gosh, if you have a burn in the kitchen or for some other reason that you burn yourself, it's great to have that plant for those acute situations. So, however, if you are making medicinal preparations like salves or tinctures, and it's not necessary to gather them at the moment you need them, instead you can coincide your collection of these herbs on La'au moon phases after the burst of power of the full moon, and they're enlivened by all of that, all of the mana that they have gotten from the La, the sun. You can also pay attention to ascending or descending moon cycle to determine which medicinal plants are best for harvesting on this particular month. And Robin, if you can remind us more about that as we look at the biodynamic phase, that'd be super.
Yeah, for sure. It's interestingly enough, we're now in the ascending moon time. And so everybody probably remembers what that means from our last discussions about it. Today and tomorrow, the moon will be in Pisces, a water sign, making it a good time to work with our leaf plants, which I was actually written down, recommended to harvest herbs and dry them at this time. So that coincides quite nicely with the La'au moon, as we're seeing in the Hawaiian phase right now. I didn't know the bit about them being enlivened by the full moon, so that was very interesting to put those pieces together just now. And Friday and Saturday, the moon will be in Aries, a fire sign, making it a good time to work with our fruit plants. So if we're looking to harvest fruit that might be stored for a little while, till it goes to market, perhaps, or you have a lot of it and you know you won't get to it all, this could be a good time, as the fruits tend to last longer. And also grafting and air layering can be good activities to do during that time.
Maybe you're going on an ocean voyage and you need that rack of bananas to last longer on the trip as you cross over to Tahiti, for instance, or some far-flung destination.
For instance. And Sunday through Tuesday, the moon will be in Taurus, an earth sign, making it a good time to work with our root plants.
Yeah. So as far as that ascending, descending goes, what I was getting at was when the moon is ascending and the energy goes to the upper portion of the plant, it would be beneficial to harvest medicinal plants that have the upper portion of the plant is the part that you're collecting for medicine, whereas in the descending moon, you would want to be collecting the root or the tuber or something that is underground.
That's right. And I remember there was a plant not so long ago. Was it Uhaloa?
Yes.
That we use the root medicinally. So there's an example of a root plant that could be harvested for its medicinal properties during the descending moon.
Very nice.
Yeah.
And if you weren't ready this month, the La'au moons come around once every 29 and a half days. That cycle is coming around again. So when we miss these opportunities, we only need to wait until the next month, and here they come again. I did forget to give the planting recommendations from the Hawaiian perspective for La'au Kulua, and that is Mai'a, Ulu, and other trees would be good. And then also to remember that the local conditions are always a stronger influence. So if heavy rain has left your ground sodden and it's not a good time to dig, or perhaps there are high winds which would desiccate a new planting, even if the moon and the stars recommend that you are out there planting, you need to use common sense and pay attention to the local conditions.
Definitely.
Yeah. So there's a whole bunch of advice for you, whether it does you good or not, I'm not sure, but sure is great to tune in with the wisdom of the ancients and always be reminded that they've been watching this land for a long time, and we have a lot to learn from them.
Truly. Well, I'd like to step foot into the kitchen garden at this point and talk about a plant that was really one of the first plants I wanted to have in my kitchen garden, but not because I wanted to eat it, but it because I wanted to shampoo my hair and soften my skin and cool my skin, and that plant is Avapui ginger. A lot of us know this plant. There's several kinds of Avapui that are growing around. There's the wild one that tends to have a small bulb, kind of a small-ish plant even, although I found the plant responds differently to different conditions as well. I've never tried bringing some wild ones into my cultivated area and seeing how they act. I was lucky enough to help someone remove a very overgrown patch of large bulb Avapui ginger from too close to their house, and thus I got my planting material, which I've literally carried around with me everywhere I've moved pieces of it to make sure. And it always seems appropriate to plant it near my outdoor shower because I can just reach over, don't even really have to snip the flowers, and they just actually keep producing gel for me.
It's the outdoor shower flower.
It's the outdoor shower flower. Indeed it is. It's excellent for sunburned skin, massage gel, conditioning your hair after showers, well used traditionally. And the plant itself is a seasonal plant. So it's right around this time of year, which is why I wanted to talk about it today. It's in full force. The blooms are stellar. There's lots of them, tons of foliage. You really have to kind of dig in through the foliage to get to the most beautiful flowers, which in the large bulb variety can be, you know, upwards of 8 inches, 10 inches tall. It's definitely a couple showers worth of shampoo ginger.
Uh-huh.
And then basically towards the end of the year when the sun cycle is getting lower and lower, and it's around, you know, post-solstice time when we have the least amount of sunshine, is when I notice the plant starting to die back in my garden. And the leaves and the flowers that went unharvested will simply wither to the ground and expose the other plants around where the shampoo ginger is planted, which are desperate for some sunshine after being completely covered up by the foliage of the shampoo ginger. Although I want to say when I've practiced some pruning of the fronds, of the greenery, the flowers don't like to be in the sun at all. They dry up very quickly.
Yeah.
So they much prefer the dark and cool areas underneath all that foliage for good flower production.
Right. And like you said, they're holding that energy for us to transfer onto our hands and then the rest of our body, that they have that cooling aspect to them. And like many members of our garden, you know, we put them in these baskets to talk about them. Is it part of the kitchen garden, or does it belong in the medicine chest? And here's an example of a plant that does have some medicinal value. Being a ginger, it is calming to the stomach, so it has a digestive property to it. It is used in combination with other herbs like noni for contusions and strains and those sorts of things. But it's ornamental, it's medicinal, and certainly its effect on the skin and on the hair could be viewed as, I suppose, as a medicinal quality. But we're always wanting to, especially in small places where we can't grow everything under the sun, we're looking for those plants from that permaculture perspective that have multiple functions. And the Avapuhi ginger is certainly one of those. And one that, like you said, shares the space, is very seasonal, and shares the space with other plants. So you get it full force, and then it's gone, and it's kind of sad to see them go. What a dramatic change in the landscape. I was introduced to the wild stands on the Nepali coast, and the difference of walking through those stream valleys when the Avapuhi is in full vegetation as opposed to not, it's a completely different place.
Mm-hmm.
And when it's there, it's just a wonderland. It's like a magic forest of lushness.
So true. So true. It's so refreshing on these hot days. I'm curious, because I didn't know much about the medicinal properties myself, is that the root, the rhizome that we use for stomach ailments, or not the gel from the flower?
It was the root that I read about, but there are probably a multitude of uses, and potentially the juice as well from the flower could be used too.
Cool.
Yeah.
New use I never knew about.
And we talked about, when is the time? I would love to have some of this giant Avapuhi ginger. And very quickly, Robin and I were making plans about, you were, of course, in your fashion, we're going to share some planting material with me. But then we very quickly realized, or it occurred to you straight away, maybe this isn't the best time of year. So maybe describe why that would be.
Absolutely. Because the plant's in full growth right now and in flowering stage, all the bud sites coming off of the rhizome, I'll see if I can explain this concisely, and the bud sites coming off the rhizomes have been used up, basically, and they're all producing either flowers or leaves. And so if we dug some of that up right now and cut all that foliage and flowers off, I think there's a better chance that it would rot in the ground versus waiting until the end of the year when the plant naturally dies back or shows senescence, as they call it, and then the bud sites are kind of like forming up to reshoot again as the spring comes along. So I'd say probably sometime in that time frame, January, February, maybe even into March, mm-hmm. is a good time to dig up some of those rhizomes and share them with your friends. I know the patch I've planted has gotten really big. It's actually how I figured out that I shouldn't cut the foliage back, because I did that last year. It was kind of taking up half of the outdoor shower with just the fronds of the plant, and I thought I'd just cut it back, but then the flowers really took a hit after I did that from being blazed out in the sun. So I'd say propagating that plant is better off in the early part of the year, or January, February, March.
Nice suggestions. And I'm feeling a little better about some cardamom that I lost as a result of, I'm thinking, of course I blame myself first, but when I think about it, it was probably not at the correct, it was in the summer when the plant material was collected. It wasn't in, and I don't know if it goes through the same level of dormancy. I know you've grown that plant before, cardamom.
Not successfully, unfortunately, okay. either. Yeah.
So next time I choose to take that gift from someone, I want to make sure I'm getting it at the right time of year. Any of those rhizomatic plants, good to pay attention to their cycle.
Truly, and it's real obvious when you look at the rhizomes themselves, like with culinary ginger or turmeric, that when they're ready to be planted, they kind of start to just a little green tip on those bud sites on the rhizome. I think that's the plant telling us that it's ready to make shoots,
yes.
so thereby it's ready to go into the ground.
Shoots. This is In the Garden on the Farm on Kuwait Community Radio. Thanks for tuning in with myself, Paul. That's Robin over there. And coming up in this hour, we are spending a nice amount of time with one of our great people who inspire us and provide us with great plant material here on the island and great knowledge of how to grow them well. And we are focusing in on the soursop family this month, so we're going to get to that coming up real soon. But first off, Robin has some interesting notable news for us.
I do, and I'm happy to say I found a good news website. And there's not a lot of those out there these days. And I read that the Indian government is putting a genetically modified the Indian government has decided to put a hold on any new genetically modified crop trials in their entire country. I'm guessing that they've just had enough of people basically not making it on the GM crops. And their reasons are actually that there's no scientific study to prove that the genetically modified technology actually increases productivity, and that if somehow down the road that crop proves to be dangerous, either to the environment or people, there's really no going backwards once you've got it in the ground and it's started spreading its seeds and pollen and all that kind of stuff. So what was being tested there was mostly rice, mustard, cotton, and chickpeas. Good Lord. Chickpeas are just fine the way they are. So I thought that was really great news, and I hope that more places in the world will follow suit. India is a huge agricultural country, so it's really pretty big news that they are willing to go that route, and I sure hope more countries follow, including Hawaii.
Definitely good news, and boy, they've suffered a lot from the effects of the Green Revolution and chemical agriculture and genetically modified agriculture there. And the birthplace of so many of the important plants that we know as food plants, the natural diversity of crop species there have sustained people for thousands of years, and nothing really has changed that significantly to necessitate this tremendous leap of strategy into genetic modification. On the contrary, the time has never been more important to focus on native or wild crop diversity relatives and the diversity of varieties that people have developed over thousands of years. We can still capture them if we work toward it, but we all need to work together, and having India take this step is momentous. Very exciting.
Indeed.
So without further ado, we're going to jump into good growing. Of course, we want to be inspiring good growing through every one of our segments, but once a month we focus in on a plant family that we are admiring, and recognizing that every plant family has its own particular requirements or preferences in terms of how we cultivate them. And Robin and I have a little bit of experience between the two of us on some things, but we like to bring in some specialists sometimes. And we are very grateful to have one of our good friends who's been on the show a couple of times before. And I'm speaking of Mylan Rupert from Kauai Nursery and Landscaping. Mylan brings decades of experience from growing in Africa, teaching and guiding people on how to be productive in terms of tree crops, in terms of fruits. And we're just so blessed to have him here on the island. And he's a busy guy there at the nursery, but sometimes we can get him out and into your ears, and he's here with us today. So, Mylan, thanks so much for taking the time to be with us.
Good morning. Thank you.
All right.
Okay, we're going to discuss the Anonaceae, family of Anonas, and there are five or six different types of Anona that are commonly cultivated, and 30 or 40 others that are not. Yeah. But the superior ones with superior fruit, we can start off with the sweet sop. That's also known as a sugar apple, Anona squamosa. It's the smallest of the fruits. Lumpy segments, extremely sweet and green. On the outside is also a red-skinned Thai variety that is basically otherwise the same as far as taste goes. Sweet sops are deciduous in dry spells or cooler seasons. They'll drop their leaves, and then they will... And when the warm season comes around, I don't like to say winter and spring, when the warm season comes around, they flush out in leaves and flowers. Yeah? Mm-hmm. They probably are the most drought tolerant of the Anonas. They'll do better in dry areas. They'll do okay in all areas, but they do well in dry areas. Yeah? Then secondly, you have the Cherimoya, which is actually a more subtropical than a tropical fruit. And it does real well, like in Southern California or Mediterranean climate. It's grown commercially in the coast of Spain, Italy. Here, it doesn't do all that well. However, my friend Ken Love on the Big Island, he had a cherimoya that grew and produced at Captain Cook and his fruit collection there. I got cuttings from him and have grown it in Pui there for about 3 years now, and it's not happy. It's struggling. Yeah. So cherimoyas, I think, are maybe in higher regions, yeah, where it's cooler. They don't like a lot of heat. Yeah.
What if you had a particular microclimate in the lowlands? I don't know, like a narrow little gulch or valley where there was more shade and maybe a wind that really preferred that spot.
Could try.
What was interesting to me about what you said, Mylan, is that you can propagate them vegetatively. I was unaware that you could grow the Anonas from cuttings. Is that a family-wide trait?
It's not easy, but you can. You know, also, air layers are possible. Mm-hmm. Generally grown from seed and then either... raise the seedlings or grafted, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you were mentioning before the show that it's dependable enough from seed. There's not that much variation that
right.
We need to worry that we're going to get a jump.
Most Anonas, with the exception of Atomoy, the next one we're going to discuss, come true to seed. Atomoya is a hybrid between the cherimoya and the sugar apple or sweet sop. And it was first crossed in about 1910 in Florida. And since then, it's pretty much spread around most tropical areas. It does, however, to produce well, good quality fruit, it needs to be hand-pollinated because it's not self-fertile. And it is not, to my opinion, I have something much better up my sleeve, which I'll come to at the end, yeah? A replacement for this troublesome atomoya.
Wow. Why is it troublesome? Because you have to hand-pollinate?
Of hand pollination and because it doesn't come true to seed.
Sure. So what is your main method for propagating the atomoya?
Up till now, I've generally grown it from seed and hoped for the best, yeah. But there are nurseries that do sell grafted atomoya, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But to have a grafted atomoya, I'd have to have a source of scions from which I'm sure of, yeah, that it was a high-quality tree, right, which I don't have at this time, yeah. The next one I want to talk about was the soursop. It's the Annona muricata, and it is the only Annona that is not deciduous, yeah. It's evergreen. And it is more, does better in wetter areas than the atomoya or the sweet sop. And it does, we were speaking with Robin before, it's quite, quality is somewhat variable. We're not sure if it's genetic or because of the growing conditions. Yeah. But there are extremely nice varieties. And we do have the Cuban fibrous soursop, which has similar fruit, similar in appearance. The leaves are more grayish green, and it is just incredibly delicious. It can be, I think it's better than any of the normal soursops I've tasted, and it doesn't have the fiber, so you don't get your teeth full of fiber, and you can just eat it with a spoon.
And that one is relatively true to seed or not?
Seems to me to
the
be
Cuban
true to seed.
Cuban fibrosis. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cool.
Excellent.
How else, if I wasn't in front of the tree, is there anything else that would, I mean, certainly the important thing is the quality of the flesh, mm-hmm. but is there any way to identify
yeah,
based on the
leaves have a distinctively gray tinge to them.
Right. But if I'm not at the tree, I'm at the farmer's market.
Oh, the fruit. I take the word for it.
Okay.
Cut off a chunk.
Yep.
And is this Cuban, sorry to interrupt mm-hmm. you, is the Cuban variety the really large one? I mean, I've heard ridiculous stories of like, what is it, like 10-pound soursops or something?
Well, I've seen immense fruit, but I think it's more the growing conditions and the genetic make of the tree. As far as I know, the Cuban fibulas are not regularly larger.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have another, because Paul and Robin asked if I knew of any other more less common ones. And there's the custard apple, the Annona reticulata, custard apple or bullock's heart, which has very large fruit. But can get about the size of a volleyball, yeah.
Wow.
And I had them in West Africa, and there I found that they're very heavy bearing but very low quality fruit, yeah.
Uh-huh.
And according to the literature on them, they're known as not being particularly good quality, yeah.
Right.
They are used as rootstock sometimes, supposedly. They're a large heart-shaped, reddish-skinned Annona. Yeah. I do not have them here. Yeah.
So maybe good in a smoothie with other tastier could be. Fruits mixed.
I don't
in
know
there
if they're
something.
Even available. Could probably find them from. What's his name on Waimanalo?
Frankie's.
Frankie has everything. I'll get to the last Annona, which is Annona, say a family, but it's a genus Rollinia. You guys know Rollinia?
Oh, yes.
Okay, well, I'm just completely blown away by Rollinia, and anybody who comes for Atamoyotin Nursery, I recommend Rollinia. You know? The other name is Biriba, which is the Biriba, which is the Brazilian name, yeah. And the botanical name is Rollinia mucosa, which I find somewhat deceptive because mucus, nah. It also has, AKA also has a name of Rollinia deliciosa, which I find is much more appropriate. Now, Rollinia, and the experience I have with it here, it doesn't seem to be as deciduous as the other Annonas. It's more like the soursop in that sense. Grows very quickly, and 3 or 4 years you're already getting a good amount of fruit, and without hand pollination. Yeah, hand pollination wouldn't hurt, but you get well-formed fruit without hand pollination.
Perhaps, though, it's important to have more than one tree in the area. I have a single tree in Kapahi that has produced very poorly, and it's a loner.
Well, my friend had one that started producing lone, and less than 4 years it was giving fruit. Yeah, he was also no. More humid area. Kapahi's humid as well, though. Yeah, so.
Yes, but I read too that water is a huge limiting factor with Rollinia.
Yeah, they need a lot of irrigation.
And I never had it on constant drips or regular drips, so that could have been a factor as well.
This wasn't irrigated either, but it's Kalaheo and very. In any case, the fruit I find really superior to any other Annona, and definitely to Atamoya.
Well, and with the Rollinia fruit, they tend to be more of a yellow color on the outside, right?
Yellow and sort of blackish.
Black on the lobes.
Right. They're not really terribly attractive. But.
Sure. Now, I've been lucky enough. We do have an Atamoya in the orchard I get to take care of, and we've had some humongous, mainly when I pollinated, fruits. The Rollinias I've seen around, they're not very widespread at market. I don't see them around for sale very much. I'm guessing it's because they're so delicious that they really never make it off the farm. But size-wise, they seem like they'd be quite a bit smaller. Generally, what's the size of a Rollinia fruit?
Ones I've seen so far are about large grapefruit size, at least.
Awesome.
And they can get quite large, a bit larger than that even. And they are so good. I have to say, I was at Nancy Redfeather and Jerry Herbert's farm in Captain Cook area last year, and Jerry treated us to Rollinia, and they had a tree that was bearing giant fruit. The first fruit he picked, he opened it, and it just wasn't quite to his liking. He had a big crowd, and he wanted the perfect one. So he dumped it on the compost heap, and then we enjoyed another one that he opened. And then when all that focus had sort of gone away, I was grabbing that one out of the compost pile, flicking off of anything else that had sort of glued to it when it got to the compost pile, and was surreptitiously eating it with people. They're so good, it's hard to say no with that fruit. They're amazing. And so fast growing, the tree is.
Yeah.
I mean, it grows like a papaya tree.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious, Mylan. Like Rollinia seems like a new introduction to me. Like I've heard of all the Moyas, and then sort of suddenly, about 4 or 5 years ago, it was like, oh, check out the Rollinia. Like, where did it come from? Did it come just sort of out of the blue, or was I just in the dark personally?
Well, I've been at the nursery. That nursery in Pui. Do we say the name? Or?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Kauai
Nursery, okay.
Oh, yeah.
12 years now. And it's just the last 5 or 6 years that I've been had access to Rolinia and started growing Rolinia. So it's new on the island, I think. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Where it actually came from, I don't know. It's probably been around a small scale for some time.
I'd have to guess Brazil, since in my research on the Anonas, so many.
Excuse me. All these Superior Anonas that we have mentioned come from Central and South America. Yeah. Yeah. I thought you meant where it came.
Oh, right.
Showed up on Kauai from, yeah.
And yet there are very many Anonas that are from Asia, not mm-hmm. not the choice fruits,
right.
Like you said.
There's some in Africa as well, even in southeast United States, I think there's a pond apple or something.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just curious, what is the birthplace? Where did the Anonas like begin and start making their travels around the world? Was it South and Central America?
Well, it seems like there might have been two or three centers of diversity,
mm-hmm.
and how that comes around, it's hard to say, because it was so long ago, but yep, Africa, Central South America, and Asia.
Well, so I've been enjoying listening to all the varieties, and I'm curious, though, I mean, what do our Anona trees, Rolinias, Soursops, what do they like best soil-wise, and if we're going to plant them out, what should we be looking for in a perfect environment for them?
A perfect microclimate or environment would depend, as we mentioned before, I think, that the soursop and the Rolinia prefer wetter areas, whereas the sugar apple, Atamoya, can do better in drier areas. Yeah. It seems to me that the sugar apple, it tends to have some fungal problems in really wet areas.
Shoots. We planted them at the food forest. Well, we'll see how they go.
Yeah. No, well. really, the Anonas, I think, are among the less demanding fruit trees as far as they seem to do pretty well in all soils.
They're not prima donnas.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
So I think plenty of, like all fruit trees, plenty of compost,
mm-hmm.
good drainage. Although Rolinia supposedly can do well on heavy, wet soils as well, yeah. Mm-hmm. But, just feed them good organic food and should be okay, yeah. There mm-hmm. are some pests, however, yeah.
Yes, and we'll be getting into some of those pests in a couple of weeks. We have a show coming up where we're going to focus on the pests. But certainly there's lots of other good horticultural practices that we can mm-hmm. that we'll focus in on today. And in watching some online videos, it seemed with Cherimoya at least, and I wonder with the other deciduous Anona family members, how important it is to prune the trees mm-hmm. before the growing season.
Yeah, they grow very fast, and they tend to make some dead wood, yeah, which should be pruned out. And any crossing branches keep a good form on them, and they're easy to keep low, yeah,
right,
just by pruning when they're in dormancy. Yeah.
Right, right.
But there isn't a special pruning, as far as I know, to promote flowering like it would be on temperate fruits, yeah.
Right. So I want to let people know we are speaking with Mylon Rupert of Kauai Nursery and Landscaping. He's the nursery manager there and very knowledgeable on a wealth of tropical fruits. We're focusing in on the Moya family, Cherimoya, Soursop, Rolinia, so many wonderful fruits that we enjoy here. And we're going to round out, we're going to come back around to pollination in just a minute, but I'm going to jump ahead while we can talk about some of the other stuff. And I know that soursop is a fruit that, soursop along with other Anonas, where the fruit is green all the way through to harvest, or at least some version of green, it can be a challenge for beginners to really know, when am I supposed mm-hmm. to cut this thing off? Is it a climacteric fruit that will continue to ripen after it's harvested? or is that only after the proper maturation has been reached?
Pretty much proper maturation on a tree. The soursop, they'll get a, when they're, before they're ripe, they'll be very shiny. Mm-hmm. And when they get ripe, they'll become more matte. Yes. And get a yellowish tinge, huh?
Yep. And any scent yet at that point, or no?
They all stink, yeah. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. The other anonas that are segmented fruit, yeah, they'll change their color a bit, of course, too. But you'll start seeing a very small cracking between mm-hmm. the segments, mm-hmm. and that's the moment you can harvest, yeah?
Nice.
You can harvest several days before complete maturity. So you don't have to wait till they're soft to harvest, yeah?
Right, right. Yeah, the sugar apple, the Thai sugar apple, mm-hmm. after you identified it and knew it was the Thai variety, because it was that red sugar apple that Robin and I enjoyed a couple of days ago, was maybe 5 days after I got it at the mm-hmm. farmer's market. And the guy who sold it to me and grew it said, check it every day. And fortunately enough, when Rob and I were getting together, it was that day.
Lucky but, for me.
Truly.
There's another thing I want to mention. If you're growing the anonas from seed, they're extremely hard shell seed, yeah? Mm-hmm. So you can either scarify them, yeah? Or I've had good luck soaking them in seaweed, strong seaweed solution
uh-huh.
for several days
uh-huh.
and then sowing them.
And your preferred method of scarification for this particular seed, if you choose that?
Going to a mechanic shop and hold them in a pair of pliers up to the grindstone.
Oh, nice.
Otherwise, you can rub them on a lava rock, yeah?
Right.
Or use toenail clippers or whatever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And as a reminder to folks, we say this time and again, scarification or soaking, but not both.
Mm-hmm.
Because a scarified seed that is then soaked becomes, it drowns. It very quickly takes up the water and suffocates.
Yes, and Mylon, I'm curious, because this has been a topic of deliberation, are the anona seeds, can they be stored and dried and saved, or are they better to be planted when they're fresh out of the fruit?
No, I think most really hard shell seeds can be kept for reasonable amount of time, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I've kept them for several months at least, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Also, when seeds, do you know that they can be used as pesticide?
Well, I do know that the seeds of the soursop have a neurotoxin in them.
All the anonas are toxic, yeah.
All the anonas have toxic seeds.
You bite
seeds.
Into one, you regret it for some time, yeah.
Wow.
If you can bite
is that head. Is that from personal experience?
Yeah.
It seemed to have that weight to it when you said it.
Yeah, but I haven't done it, but supposedly they are do have toxic insecticide properties. So you could try pounding up some, soaking them in water, and then spraying them with your pepper soap solution or whatever is a natural pesticide, yeah.
Awesome. Right, right. Well, what I like is seed planters rejoice because you can actually get a real tree out of an anona seed in just a few years that will be bearing fruit that was true. If you choose not to grind them up, that is. But I just think that's a wonderful thing. I know there's a lot of people out there like me who eat amazing fruit and just really want to plant the seed and see something come of it. So.
Yeah. No problem is land's expensive on Kauai, yeah.
Where do you put it? Bring it to the seed exchange.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we're going to maybe drift into one of our final segments of the show right now. It's an easy segue because we're going to continue speaking about anona, at least in the beginning. And it is, like Mylon said, either required or in some cases beneficial to do an assisted pollination effort on the flowers, which the flowers of the anona are quite distinctive and not immediately obvious what you're looking at and what part are you supposed to be collecting the pollen from, and what part are you supposed to be transferring the pollen to, and at what point are you supposed to do it? So let's get into all of that business.
Yeah, so to start out with, the pollen of the annona flowers matures about 24 hours before the female part of the flower is receptive. So that makes it kind of difficult for the plant to get the job done, so to speak. So what I've done, was with a little direction from a fruit farmer friend, was to go and collect some pollen in the late day of day one, let's say, and I used a bamboo skewer actually for that part, and gently with a jar that I was holding underneath, gently sort of tapped out, and I could see pollen dust falling into my jar. And I went to many flowers and collected lots of pollen all in that same jar, sort of as a composite of all the pollens. And then maybe this is why I wasn't so successful. I actually went back the next morning thinking that that was the right time, but Mylan just let me know today that it's actually 24 hours later in the late day of day two that the female part of the flower is receptive. And since I'd mixed all the pollen, I'm getting a nice cross-pollination thing happening. When I went back to actually give the pollen to the female part of the flower, which by then is a little bit closed up, and Mylan also let me know it's okay to, you know, break off one of those petals if you need to for your paintbrush, kind of a watercolor paintbrush, really small, to get in there and dab it in the pollen first, and then basically go visit the ovary of the flower with a swirling method so that you get really good pollination all around the entire flower. And it really did change the quality of the fruit set, because we had gotten sort of malformed small fruits sporadically, but that year was the year we got those really big, perfect Atomoyas, and it was a pleasure, and it was really not that hard to do, all things considered. It was timing. I had to make the time at the right time and get the ladder out, because a lot of the flowers were up there pretty high.
Uh-huh. Cool.
You can go online, YouTube and so, and find a number of videos on pollinating, especially Atomoya or other annonas. I found one good one from a farm in Kona. It's called Hand Pollinating Atomoya Fruit Trees from Kumuaina Farm. Check that out. And also just general information on all the annonas. Morton's Fruits of Warm Climates has a lot of information. You can find it online, you know.
Yes. The new crop website through Purdue University has a lot of the chapters from Morton's Fruits of Warm Climates. I'm not sure the entire book is available,
but you can get it. Yeah.
Okay, great. Julia Morton. I was looking for her first name. Yeah. Fantastical. Mm-hmm. And we were talking, too, about the requirement of some other crops as well. And while we're gaining our skills with the Moya crops, there are other fruit-bearing plants that either benefit from or in some cases necessitate hand mm-hmm. pollination. And one of the ones we did speak with, I'll just throw out first, with Tony Lydgate, is the vanilla, which mm-hmm. actually is absolutely required. You will get absolutely no vanilla pods unless you do a hand pollination. And it's quite a fun thing to do every morning, go out and see the new flowers, the orchids that come out, and pollinate them.
We've had workshops, seminars at Koi Nursery, our monthly workshops. We had one last year on vanilla, yeah, mm-hmm. and I probably will have one coming up soon. You can check KwaiNursery.com website for any workshops and seminars come up. We cover all different aspects of landscaping and horticulture, everything from orchids, lei making, fruit tree, bamboo, water plants, weeds, lawns, grass, turf grass, pretty much everything, yeah.
What a great resource for the island. Well, I know that hand pollinating definitely increases the amount of fruits you get by a huge amount in those crops that like assisted pollination, like the anonas. But I was curious to talk about dragon fruits a little bit.
Okay. Dragon fruit in Asia are pollinated by fruit bats, which we unfortunately don't have here because, you guys are vegetarians, but they're good to eat, yeah? Anyway, some, you can get much better production by hand pollinating the dragon fruit,
mm-hmm.
which the flowers open at night, but very early in the morning they're still open. You can get with a brush some pollen from one large flower and just go to the next one. Stigma, yeah. You don't have to go 24 hours later.
Right, because each seed inside the dragon fruit is the result of an individual pollinating event, right? Mm-hmm. And so if you think of how many seeds there are, that's a lot of pollinating to do.
And if the anona flowers are a good example of a flower that's kind of ambiguous and not obvious where to put the pollen, the dragon fruit flower is the opposite of that.
Yeah.
They're the most obvious and amazing flowers, and great to just get out there and smell them and see them while they're happening. Too, you were mentioning as well that it varies quite greatly in terms of which variety of dragon fruit.
Yeah, some varieties that we have at nursery self-pollinate very well, yeah, whereas others do not at all, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so the Thai variety that you mentioned with the red flesh,
yes,
that has just
red dragon, yeah,
that rarely produces, and you said it's recently produced a fruit. Was that from a assisted pollination event?
No, I clock out at 4:00. I'm not there at night with running around with a brush.
And so it's actually the case that it is the minority of fruits, fruit-bearing trees and vines and other kinds of plants that produce fruits here in the tropics that require hand pollination.
Fortunately. Yeah.
And we hear often from our beekeepers the unfortunate state we'd be in if we didn't have the bees to pollinate. And is that very true of a lot of the fruit trees that we depend on here on Kauai?
Mm-hmm. It depends, yeah. Mangoes, for instance, you don't see many bees around, yeah. It's more gnats that pollinate them,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Yep.
But we need the bees, yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah. And do you keep them there at the nursery for that purpose?
We have hives in the nursery. But once again, we're not in a fruit production. We're more into plant production rather than fruit production.
Right.
Yeah, supplying our gardeners with all the fruit trees they could possibly desire.
Indeed. Well, yes, we do have some announcements, so we're going to fast forward to that. We want to let people know that Kauai Vibrations with Tracy is coming up at 1 o'clock for 2 hours, and then Shaka Kiaka is coming up with his
Pupule show.
Thank you, Robin. We do have a couple of announcements, and Robin's got one in her hot hands right now.
I do. I want to tell you about the Waipop Music and Mango Festival this weekend, Sunday, August 17th, from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m., lots of local talent, Kauai artisans, keiki activities, silent auction, mango cooking contest, and the biggest mango contest. Yay! Waipa is a half mile past Hanalei, and you can get more information about the event at waipafoundation.org, Waipa, W-A-I-P-A, foundation.org. Sounds like it's going to be good fun.
It's going to be awesome. We do have a couple more things I want to announce really quickly. Hawaii Farmers Union meeting coming up tonight from 6 to 9, maybe starting at 6 and maybe going to around 9 p.m. there at the Anahola Clubhouse. A focus on buying local challenges and opportunities panel with various value-added product makers as well as local farmers. A legislative update with Don Heacock. We'll be hearing about the potential of building an intern co-op for local farms. And that's coming up tonight from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Anahola Clubhouse. As well, there's a honey harvesting and wax processing workshop coming up starting this weekend at KCC. For more information, 245-8318. We do have a question from somebody called in with a question, what type of fertilizer to use when dragon fruit is flowering? Is it important to fertilize dragon fruit when it is flowering?
No, I don't believe so. They like very well-drained media, yeah, and they do well with compost or organic fertilizers, but they're not heavy feeders at all. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Good to know. And as far as fertilization of the Annonas, good quality organic compost, rich in organic matter, good drainage, and we're going to get a bevy of delicious fruits for us. And if you are interested in seeing some of these varieties, you can view them there at Kauai Nursery and Landscaping as one possibility for you down there in Puhi. And if you're fortunate enough, Mylan will be somewhere nearby, and he's been very generous with his time and his guidance on some of the selections that we've made. So if you're lucky enough, if not, Kevin, his right-hand man, is extremely capable and quite a lot of fun to spend time with as well. So in all ways, they'll take care of you down there. And we want to let you know that if you want to hear past episodes of the show, you can go to the KKCR homepage, click the audio archive link at the top of the page, and it will lead you to various archive shows, but lots of In the Garden on the Farm shows are available there. We do want to give a special thanks to the In the Garden on the Farm team, which include engineer Jack and our phone screener Mac, and our webmaster Laura Christine, and our station manager Dean. Everybody here who keeps things going on in the station here, we so appreciate it. If you want to have your ag-related event announced on air, please send it to us a couple weeks in advance to inthegardenonthefarm@gmail.com.
This has been In the Garden on the Farm with your hosts, Robin and Paul. We'd love to thank our special guests on the show today, Mylan.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Mylan can sometimes be found at Kauai Nursery, 245-7747. Please tune in again next week for more stimulating conversation on our relationship with the life of the land that gives us life. Aloha.
Aloha.
Talk with me now and let me see through your eyes where there is so much life. We are biding our time for these myths to unwind, for these changes we will confront. So please beware with every place that you head, and look to your soul for these things that you know. For the trees that we see cannot forever breathe with the changes they will confront. You know, some people, they just won't understand, or just won't understand what he's saying. Thank you for your message, but I don't understand, or just won't understand. Land, it has seen many hands, it has wealth and gold, and it is fragile and old, and now the greedy souls just don't care to know all the changes it will confront. So speak out.
rinsed and keep it clean as it holds. Cause the way that it shines may just dwindle with time as the changes it will move on. So you know some people that just won't understand, or just won't understand these things. Thank you for your message, but I don't understand, or just won't understand.